Maxine is a composite. The blockages, the conversations, the doors that closed are real, and they are closing across Southeast now. This is their story. Winchester sits among the least deprived constituencies in England, yet its healthcare system struggles to match willing candidates to essential NHS training places that would put qualified nurses into understaffed wards. The training infrastructure exists, the people who want to learn exist, but the funding decisions that would connect them have been made elsewhere. This is Maxine speaking.
I grew up watching my father work as a GP in Winchester, coming home with stories that made medicine feel like a calling rather than just a career. After 8 years in pharmaceutical research, I knew something was missing. I wanted to be where the patients were, not just studying their samples in a lab. Bertie, my rescue greyhound, seemed to sense the change coming before I did. Our walks through the South Downs became planning sessions where I finally admitted what I wanted: to retrain as a nurse and work directly with people who needed care. In 2022, I applied to Health Education England's Southeast for graduate entry nursing. The application process was straightforward enough, and I felt confident with my biomedical sciences background from Southampton. Then I received the rejection letter. All places were filled, they said. I might have accepted that, except I kept seeing advertisements for the same program running until the application deadline passed. If the places were truly filled, why were they still advertising? I decided to go directly to the trusts. At Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust, the training coordinator was surprisingly candid. "We've got capacity for 12 more student nurses," she told me across her desk. "The clinical staff are ready to mentor them. The wards need them desperately. But Health Education England has capped the funded places. Treasury spending limits, they call it. We literally cannot afford to train people we desperately need." The phrase sat strangely with me. Cannot afford to train nurses. But I could see the wards. I knew the need existed. And here was someone telling me the capacity existed too. What exactly was it they couldn't afford? I tried Portsmouth Hospitals University NHS Trust next, thinking a larger trust might have different constraints. The story was identical. 20 unfilled clinical placement spots, the placement coordinator explained. "We've got senior nurses eager to teach, departments crying out for more hands, but the training budget has been frozen. There is no funding to expand the program." Both trusts offered me healthcare assistant positions immediately. The irony wasn't lost on me. They had money to employ me in a support role, but no money to train me for the qualified position they actually needed to fill. I took the Winchester role to gain experience while I figured out what to do next. During a quiet afternoon shift, I drove to the former Andover Nursing College building. I'd heard it mentioned in conversations, but wanted to see it myself. The building stood solid and intact, with a sign still visible above the main entrance. I found the facilities manager doing maintenance rounds and asked if I could look around. "We're not allowed to use the simulation labs for training anymore," he said, unlocking a door to reveal fully equipped clinical training bays. The mannequins were still there, the monitoring equipment still functional, the learning resources still on the shelves. "Not enough funding streams," they tell me. "So it just sits here." I stood in that empty training room and felt something shift in my understanding. Here were the resources. Here was the space. The equipment worked. The building was sound. And I knew from my conversations with the trusts that qualified staff were available to teach. The students were available to learn. The wards were available to receive newly qualified nurses. What exactly was missing? At Winchester Job Centre a few weeks later, I met three qualified nurses who couldn't afford retraining courses to return to practice after career breaks. "The refresher programme costs £2,000, one told me. "I've got the knowledge, I've got 15 years of experience, but I need that certificate to get back on the register. Who's got £2,000 just lying around? I started asking different questions. If the government issues the pound, why was it treating pounds like a scarce resource when connecting unemployed nurses to understaffed wards? The building existed. The teachers existed. The students existed. The jobs existed on the other end. Someone in Westminster had looked at this situation and decided the missing piece was money, as though money were something the government had to find rather than something it could create to mobilise the real resources that were sitting idle. Then I found Juliet through a mutual contact. She was working in Northwest Hampshire, trying to expand her department's training capacity and hitting identical barriers. Health Education England keeps telling me the same thing, she said over the coffee. No additional funding available, but I can see 20 people in my area who want exactly this training, and we've got the clinical placements ready for them. The pattern was too clear to ignore. Across the southeast, the same conversation was happening in trust after trust. The same building sitting empty, the same qualified staff available to teach, the same desperate need for more nurses on the wards, and the same answer from the funding bodies: there is no money. I used to accept that explanation. It sounded reasonable, even responsible. Everyone was making the best of difficult circumstances, managing limited resources carefully. But standing in that empty training facility, meeting those unemployed nurses, seeing those unfilled placement slots, I began to understand something different. The government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would connect willing students to essential training to qualified roles on understaffed wards. Every part of the chain existed, except the decision to fund it. That wasn't a financial constraint. That was a political choice dressed as an accounting problem. I'm still working as a healthcare assistant, still watching this system fail to connect the people and resources that exist on both sides of an artificial funding gap. But I understand now what I didn't understand when I started. The question was never whether the money existed somewhere in the Treasury's accounts. The question was whether the real things existed: the people, the skills, the buildings, the jobs that needed filling. They did exist, all of them. The decision not to connect them wasn't made because the resources weren't there. It was made because someone in Westminster decided that training nurses was a cost to be minimised, rather than an investment in the health service that every constituency needs. This isn't just my story or Winchester's story. It's the story of every place where people and needs exist side by side, while someone with the power to connect them says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard isn't bare. The political will to open it is what's missing.
What Maxine experienced has a name: fake experts. The tobacco industry spent decades citing scientists who claimed smoking was harmless, giving their preferred conclusions the authority of expertise while ignoring the overwhelming evidence of harm. The technique works by finding credentialed voices willing to repeat a convenient fiction until repetition makes it sound like settled fact. In Maxine's story, every funding refusal came wrapped in economic authority. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, she was told. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The fake experts cited against NHS investment treat government budgets like household budgets, as though the institution that issues the pound could run short of pounds. They ignore economists who point out that currency-issuing governments face resource constraints, not monetary ones. When Maxine found empty training facilities, unemployed qualified nurses, and understaffed wards existing simultaneously, she was seeing the proof that resources were available but politically unconnected. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Winchester, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Winchester ranks 498 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, placing it in the 10th decile, according to the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 from MHCLG. The constituency has 4,182 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £19.4 million, according to 360, giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.